How do we join with others to achieve and experience more and get in flow as a unified team? This is the question we ask each episode in the Unified Team podcast. Here's your host, Rob McPhillips.
It was 20 when I decided to make a career shift. I qualified as a dentist, a dental surgeon, and things were not in favor. They were not working out for me. I tried, did my research, but it didn't work out for me. I wanted to change my career and I was thinking, what should I do? There are so many careers and I'm passionate about so many things. How do I get myself onto one path or just one journey? Then I just connected the dots. I came to the UK and I did random jobs. But let's connect the dots. Let's find a commonality between all those random jobs. And when I found the commonality, I realized that I was a very good collaborator. And despite of being in a current role, I always reached out to different other teams to do a collaboration and come up with either a D&I campaign or do some artwork or do some writing piece for the communications team. So that's when I realized, okay, this is the commonality, people team it is. And I spoke to my manager and I said, this is where I want to grow. And this was back in Boop, where I was just a healthcare consultant. So I decided, okay, I'll grow here. And it took me, I think, 6 months. I took a break of 6 months to take care of my newborn because, of course, I took a leave after my extended mat leave. I was home looking after him. And then I picked up a HR administrator role in a company called QA Limited, which is in Slough. Great company, enjoyed working there. However, it was fast-paced and I learned so much that they gave me a promotion within 2 months. Again, that was only because I carried, I think, a lot of experiences from the past and the element of care. And this is where I started to understand that what works in HR is you really have to be authentic and care for the people. When you care, you just follow the process. You do what you can at your very best for them. And that certainly brings a great impact as a HR professional on the organization. So this is me. I've been very lucky because I approached the right mentor, coach, who shares similar value. It's very difficult to analyze that, especially when you want to start a journey, you don't know someone. So I've been very lucky on that end because I just tell them I'm struggling. Can you help me? That has made massive difference to my career path. I'm in HR now, currently on a break, but I have been a senior HR coordinator for the last 2 years and I've thoroughly enjoyed my journey.
What got you into dental surgery?
So what got me into dental? It's a very good question. Honestly, I was 16 years. My father, he's very disciplined. He made most of the decisions in terms of what career we should choose. He also funded them. So we didn't have such a concept, I would say, as where you are a student and you can work. You wouldn't find that in India as much as you find it here. And I love it. I totally love that independence that you have to earn as well as when you're learning. In India, that's not the case. And it's a cultural thing. Most of the families, they just spend on their children until they get married. So coming with that background, we tend to obey and listen to everything our parents have to say. He decided it's either engineering or dentistry for me. And I was like, no, engineering is not for me. Biology, I like science. I was not a bright student, but I wasn't that bad. I just followed what everyone else did. I didn't have a brain to myself when it came to choosing my career in my teens, but I passed all my 5 years of education that you contribute towards earning this qualification. And I passed with good grades. I started to practice as a dentist in the afternoon, assisting some great practitioners around in Mumbai, because that's where I come from. And I practiced for 3.5 years. And then I got married and came to the UK.
Given that your dad had made the choice and he'd funded it, was there a problem for you to give up or pressure not to?
Pressure, definitely. I think I'm very emotionally attached to my parents. I am not a rebel. For me, the pressure was enormous. And during every examination, I used to think, how am I going to make my parents proud? So it was not about me, I'll be honest. It was always about my dad. Even if he put me in an activity, it could be a singing, a classical, Indian classical singing. I used to go there and I used to be like, how will I perform so that my parents are happy? And more than my mom, it used to be my dad. Because for me, performing was equal to making him feel proud. So yeah, a lot of pressure, I would say.
Has that changed now?
A lot. I think I've become a free bird since I came to the UK. I think when I came to the UK, I saw the culture and I loved it as much as I love the Indian culture to some extent. It's all about what really feeds you in a good way. So when I came to the UK, I started to like the way, like I told you, students, they do a job on the side, they earn money. They have the freedom to come home whenever they want to in the night. I didn't have that. So little things that I saw here in terms of the neighborhood in the UK, which is totally different to India and things like this. And I started to enjoy that freedom because I never had it. Let's say that. I was married when I came to the UK. And when my husband used to go to work, I used to particularly just go on a day trip, like by myself. Solo trips. And I used to just explore Manchester because that's where we started from. Then I think I did a lot of exploring, discovery. Then I just went for job search. I was a dentist, but on my residence permit, it was written, basically, I'm restricted to do any dental work, a dentist work. So I couldn't even be a hygienist, even if I gave any examinations. The whole process was to go back to India, apply for examinations, get a student visa, etc. But then I didn't know whether I live with my husband, if I get the same university, which is closer. So lots of ifs and buts and a lot of funds, which I didn't have at that point of time. And I didn't want to ask my parents because they've done a lot. So yeah, Rob, my answer would be yes to your question. A lot has changed because independency with freedom, what comes is also the courage to be yourself. I think until 27, I was just not myself. I was like how my parents wanted me to be, which is a nice thing. I'm not saying they didn't want me to be. In fact, they wanted me to be really perfect, approachable. People should like me. So a lot of discipline came from that area and understanding. But when I came here, freedom got me independence. It got me courage to be myself. I started to talk. I started to talk about my failures. Then I started to write about it. I created an anonymous account on Instagram because I didn't know how would people take that. But when I started to win followers, I think I got around like 9,000 followers and we shared the same commonality. So I was like, okay, it's time I just show them who am I. And then from there, I started collaborating with fountain pen brands. So all this wouldn't really happen if I wouldn't know the culture here in the UK.
So it sounds like it was a positive cultural shock. Was there any negative aspects?
As a person, even if there is anything that is negative, I tend to forget it. And I've learned this over the years because in my initial 20s, up until 20s, it never worked in my favor, even if I thought this is negative. Instead, it backfired. So I evolved as a woman and I tend to not think about the negative side of it. Even today, if someone comes and tells me, but this doesn't happen in India, so what? Embrace it. If it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. Just adapt, be flexible. And somehow that negative turns into a positive. It's the attitude that changes.
What's clear is you have a very positive attitude. Now I'm trying to link the work that you do now. So your HR, and so I can see dental. I can see the reasons you went into dental. I can see it's crazy that in the UK that you weren't allowed to practice when we're so short of dentists and there's such chaos in the NHS for dentistry.
I'll be very honest, Rob. When I came here with the qualification, I was like, wow, I'm going to be such a good dentist here. And dentists earn so much here. This was all on my mind. And then I come down here, okay, fine. It's not working out. Let's find about the visas. Not working out. I don't have the funds. Okay, so what next? And then I used to think about, I'm working in McDonald's. No, I'm not going to do that. I have a qualification in my hand. But then I did it because you have bills to pay. So I worked in McDonald's right from a crew member. And the people manager really liked me there. So she trained me as a shift manager and then a training manager. And then I looked into the L&D side for all the employees who were hired. But this is what I mean to say. I was not ready for this, but I was just stuck like your post said today. And then I wanted to move out of it. So I was like, let's embrace it. It's okay. Even if I have a dentist qualification, I'm going to work in McDonald's. That's how it was.
When you look at your work now, what has dentistry taught you that's transferred into the HR realm?
Is the fact that you have to care, the element of care, which comes with empathy, but you don't have to be emotionally attached to your patient. So to your employee. And that's very common here. And that's the power of empathy in HR professional. When you know how much to get involved and bring that person out of that problem, as simple as that. And it's just like a patient coming to the clinic, have massive pain, care for the person, give him the right medicaments. If you cannot do a root canal at that point of time, he may be having swelling, give him antibiotics, anti-inflammatory, send him back home, give them a good course of how do you put these hot and cold ice packs and no warm flushes, etc. But that's the same thing you do in HR. It's just that they're not patients, they're employees. If they come to you with any concerns, don't get emotionally attached because that's where empathy can become your weakness. So keep it strong.
Are you comfortable telling me what you like and dislike in HR?
So what I like in HR is what I'll start with. I think teamwork is an integral part when it comes to any successful organization. So you want to compare organizations with successful organizations. And I would say it's the teamwork that makes it successful. And what it means from HR perspective, Rob, is that HR is responsible for managing people and also monitoring so that management becomes a little easy. And hence it plays a very crucial role in fostering team efficacy or efficiency. So this is what I like about HR when it comes to understanding the role of different teams. Every team is different and every team has different common goals. So that is a step higher to understanding the role and then the common goal of that particular team. Then you also look like HR wouldn't view a team as just people. It's not just a collection of people. It's like a single unit and they are working towards a common goal, like I mentioned. So that is one part of HR that we understand people as single unit and not as individual people when it comes to teamwork. Team and work together also means team is people for me, work is process. So people and process together make teamwork possible. So that is another aspect of HR that I like, that we look at it together and we balance it out. I think there's also team dynamics that I really enjoy as a HR professional, Rob, which is nothing but paying very close to the behavioral relationships that people share with each other. And this is where it can get either too easy or too difficult at times, too challenging at times, because when you have effective team dynamics that can lead to improved communication, you will have problem solvers, like great problem solving abilities in-house. You will have increased productivity, which is great performance. But when you have something that takes a team dynamics, say poor team dynamic, then in that case, it would result in conflict, in miscommunication and reduced efficiency, bringing the performance down. Hence, when it comes to managing people, it's important to monitor them as well so that we can bring the best for them, because their success together is organization success. And what people look at HR is basically it's employment law, and law always looked at as a boundary or restriction, limitations, but that's not true. It means to protect you. Law is to protect people. And if this is something that we understand, our life as an employee gets very easy in any organization when it comes to the different laws and rules in place or following them. It really gets very easy. So yeah, team dynamics, like I said, and building effective teams as well. I really enjoy workplace development activities that we do as a HR professional. And these activities, they just don't bring bonding. They also make you understand the different personalities in the team. And that opens up the communication. If there is confidentiality to be maintained at some point, then even that is communicated in a way that it is not communicated. So I think that balance that HR brings when it comes to communication within a team in terms of confidentiality is also great. That is also, I would say, something that I have learned in HR. Yes. So these are a few things that I like about HR. What I dislike that people are scared of HR. That's one thing I should say. I've seen most of the employees say this, that, ooh, HR is yours. No need to do that. It makes me feel like, have I chosen the right career? Because I want to be really close to people and help them. So that is only one thing that I would say I dislike, because HR needs to come out and tell people that we are monitoring you to protect you. As simple as that. a big difference, Rob.
HR is an area I don't know a great deal. What I've noticed is in the time when things aren't going so well, there's downsizing or something like that. That's usually when you see HR. Maybe that's where often the perception is it's about disciplinaries. It's about coming in when there's redundancies. And some of my observations have been it's very much about, or the perception has been of it's protecting the company. And it hasn't always come across as protecting the people. But I suppose that really the only times I've come across that is when it's as a group. So I suppose the individual one-to-one thing might be more supporting them. So I'd like to ask you about the idea of human resources. I think that name is outdated and it comes from an idea like in an old factory where people were resources. I understand at the time, what was it, 100, 120 years ago, it was Frederick Taylor, and then it was about let's make people better because then the business will be better. Through the 30s, 40s, 50s, it was often used as, it made people more like numbers or certainly feel like numbers. Do you have a view on that? Or
so when it comes to 30s, 40s, 50s, Rob, I would just say I haven't really traveled retrograde to that extent to understand how HR was understood at that point of time. About today, the reason why I made a choice to get into this field, and knowing me, people know how much I love people and I love working with people. So when my colleagues, my other dentist friends, they got to know that, okay, I've chosen HR as a career field, they were very happy for me. And they told me that, AK, you're going to do so good there because you're a people person. So that's the first thing. When they complimented me, they also said and meant that HR is for those who are people person. When you say in terms of disciplinaries, grievances, yes, these are certain processes in an organization, and an organization must take into consideration the aspirations and its capability. When there's a balance, I would say if everyone exceeds the aspirations over the capability of an organization, that is where most of the times you would come across certain unforeseen events. But that is all about management and how you look at it, how you want to present it. And hence, we monitor and manage together. When I say that, I have read this and learned this from the famous Dave Ulrich. He said this in one of his videos, that aspirations can definitely exceed the capability, but again, you need to keep some control over it. But this is where I think if we work on monitoring and managing them together, an organization can definitely be successful in terms of disciplinaries, grievances. It's all a part of the culture. When a culture is thriving, there's very less of it to damage the organization's reputation. So I would say that, yes.
What I'm reading into that is the role of HR depends on the way that the company is managed. So I'm thinking if you are in a company that is very beholden to next quarter's earnings and it's, okay, let's downsize, then HR is probably often quite negatively seen. If you're in a company that's growing and thriving, then HR is probably a positive impact. Does that make sense?
It does. That is what companies and the nature of their work scope brings in, like small companies, you have startups, you have ambitious companies, and you'll see the culture is different everywhere. So when it comes to the type of the work scope that these companies bring along with them, I think every HR professional would act differently in the role that they've been given to be able to keep that team work together, which is people and process, like I said. So there has to be a balance. This only comes with effective communication from the leadership team as well. That is not to miss out. So the leaders who have led the organization all this while, they have a lot of insights to share. And this is what you build up your perspective on, your ideas on. And then, yes, it's all a teamwork. So I would say yes.
You've talked about monitoring and managing. I'm very interested in what that actually looks like and how you would do that from a HR perspective.
In terms of monitoring and management, so when it comes to monitoring, this is where your disciplinaries come in. And so that you don't have to end up having too many disciplinaries, you just have to monitor, pick up volunteers in the particular teams that you know need attention, ask them to daily go through or weekly or monthly go through certain team huddles. keeping them aligned with, keeping their values aligned with the organization goals as well. So there's a lot of work done behind in terms of bringing this to effect. We always want less reportings because that makes us feel that people are happy. As simple as that. So in order to achieve that, I would say monitoring is all about placing volunteers in place, having volunteers in place, and ensuring that they are conveying the right strategies that we have planned in terms of increasing the team efficiency and morale, because, and that can be done through various workplace development activities as well. So yes, there's, in terms of monitoring and managing, monitoring is more of a bit of a motivational zone as well, where we motivate people and managing becomes effective.
Okay. So my work is relationships, helping teams unite through relationships. And I'm always obsessed about how do you measure improvements? And so it's a very difficult thing. And I came up with the idea that you if people are working for a business and they're being paid, then there should be a return on that. That's a measure. And I was Googling around and I understand that there is a measurement of employee return on investment or team return on investment. Is that one of the things that you would use in monitoring?
So this is in terms of...
I was looking at the concept. So I came up with an idea that really, if you're going to look at a team and you're going to look at individuals, you want to, in order to invest and to improve them to work better individually and as a team, then you need to measure what impact that's having. So it seems to make sense that if you're paying, like, staff costs are pretty much fixed, but the return on those costs, it could be minimal, it could even be negative, or it could be hugely a great return. So it seemed like to make sense to measure that. When I Googled it to see if anyone else had that idea, there seems to be a concept of employee return on investment. Just wondering, is that the kind of tool that you would use?
I think this would really sit in terms of even budget planning, or even if any retention rate needs to be calculated, we look at costs incurred. So all of this would be sitting with the people partners at that level. So yeah, I wasn't exposed to this level of involvement or even assistance. So it would be wrong if I comment without an experience in that particular area.
So you're looking at helping people to thrive, helping a team to thrive. What, in your experience, do you see works? What do you see is the most? I'm assuming that there's a budget and you have to look at how do you allocate that money. What are the things that you look at first and in a ranking?
I think recognition comes first, to see them happy. So even if I have a team of four and they all have different strengths that they bring to the team, recognition and rewards, they could be for certain acts of kindness. Say if it's a customer service role and we're doing daily calls, maybe we are answering 20 calls per day. And if one customer was really lovely, we do an act of kindness for them. When we do an act of kindness for a customer, the customer also sometimes writes back saying or giving a recommendation, feedback, or a review for the person who basically gave them a good customer service. So these things are also implemented, which is not just straight from, like, sometimes recognition only comes from your manager or your seniors, but we also try to bring that recognition from the customer to the employee who's just dealt with them. So this is one of the things. We also implement a tool where it can be, so I would call it a performance tool. So you give a service, it could either be from sales, you could be from HR, but if you've given a service to someone and you've made them happy, then this person comes back to you with a nice feedback and we pick up those nominations towards the end. We do a little award ceremony and we would have like top nominations and a little party, which is well controlled. And yeah, so recognitions like these, but there's a lot of strategies like we put in place, like a performance tool where these feedbacks can be gathered. Nominations for which value do you want to nominate this particular employee for? Not just for the last picture of holding an award in your hand, but it is also for basically going through that process. You received a feedback, oh, this person has given me a nomination for this particular value that I align with this organization. Oh, what does that mean? Okay, I'm going to try more on this particular value. It motivates you as well. So yeah, I would say recognition comes first. Second thing is, I would say, check-ins. If it's your team, just do some regular check-ins. Hi, are you okay? It's the energy in the end that we feel, Rob, because when you do check-ins, people feel nice about it. And there's no better feeling than just feeling nice sometimes. Then the third thing that I would say is help them manage their workload throughout the day. If they need help, just a quick check in the morning. It barely takes 2 minutes when I used to do that in my previous work. Just ask them what's on your to-do list today. Is everything manageable? And they will surely say, no, this is where I need help. Then just ask them, are you comfortable to reach out to this person? Because sometimes you may have people in your team who are not very comfortable reaching out. So knowing that personality type, it is your duty to know that, okay, you just need to reach out to someone. I can do that for you if you want. But if they say, no, it's okay, I'll reach out, then that's great. But having that conversation to just make them feel a little light, to get their day started. So I think, yes, check their to-do list. And then you can also check whether they're having their regular breaks, because it's very important that when you are working, you take your breaks on time. And that has always been on my mind when it comes to a team, that every member should take their break. It could be a different hour, not together. That's fine. We can manage the workload, but a break is a must. So that it just gives you some relaxation time, no burnout zones. It's just beneficial to take a break. I also check whether the employee is making benefits from the benefits that we give. For example, you have gym membership. You have, say, early Friday finish in certain organizations. It could also be a well-being hour that we give for meditation, yoga. So are employees really making the most of it? Why are they not making the most of it? Check their workload, have a conversation. Do they want to have that kind of a benefit on their plate? If not, if they're not interested, for example, I was never interested in a gym membership because I hate going to the gym. So yeah, there could be someone like me who doesn't like going to the gym. So yeah, keeping a check on whether they are making the best of the benefits that have been provided. Keeping also a check on their sickness record. Why are they falling sick all over again? Communicate with them. And all these things, Rob, when you communicate with your team members, when it comes to sickness, the annual leave, have you taken your leave? Why are you not taking your leave? Just book them off, go somewhere, have a nice vacation. Some people just want to work, work and work. And I've seen them. They just don't want to take a leave. But having these conversations is very important. And this is where we monitor how they take their breaks, how they go on, whether they go on a leave. And this is to ensure that all the benefits that they have, they're really managing it really well and using it. So yeah, there are plenty many others. This is the best I can think of so far.
They're important ones. They're basically showing that you care and showing that you value them as a person, which is fundamental core thing that people want. Okay, so you're giving me a different insight into HR. When I look and basically like the business environment at the moment, I see you've got the problem of Gen Z, that's a lot of people talk about. You've got burnout is a big issue, mental well-being, increasing workload. So I'm just wondering, of the issues that businesses are currently facing, what have you noticed is impacting you in the HR sphere as the biggest constraints to teams working well together?
I think, Rob, when or any such stressful events at workplace, they naturally stop or lower their pace, tone, and interest towards having a communication. And that creates a communication gap. So for me, that's the first thing I see. Even if someone is feeling low, they don't want to communicate. And this is where mental health plays a big role, especially with burnouts. We know what several and the effect that they can have. It all deals with hormones in the human body. So stress is not good. And the moment you feel that you're stressed or you're struggling, just speak to someone. That's the first thing I would say. Open communication is a must. And this is where your relationships at workplace can help you, whether that person is a leader or your senior or a manager or just your colleague. Just have a conversation, because communication just opens all channels and it brings opportunities that we can't even imagine. It's beyond our expectations as well at times. We may be expecting really little, and what we get is a big reward. And communication can bring that in place. So I would say during any burnout, during any mental health, any signals that you get that, okay, I'm not feeling well psychologically, approach people Only people can help you.
When someone's going through something like that, often that's when they shut down communication. There is lots of this cultural stress, cultural shame, stress. Yeah, I'm guessing that's probably when it's difficult, because I don't know, for whatever reason, we've always been told just stiff upper lip and just get on with it. And there's something wrong with you if you're not feeling like that. This is how people feel. So I can see where that would be so difficult. And it's probably also, I don't know if it's something you experience, but it's difficult to open someone up when they're feeling like that.
It's very difficult. It's very challenging. Yes, Rob, I agree with you. To have someone open up their worries to you, their concerns, it takes a great deal of energy and commitment. And this can only be driven if you are genuinely interested in helping them come out of it. So I would say a lot comes with your maturity to handle such circumstances or events. This is where I always talk about maximizing well-being. And for me, it's very important that you take account of your overall well-being rather than just that one thing. Okay, I'm performing. I'm a great performer. Oh my God, I want to hit my targets. I want to achieve this. But are you happy doing all of this? Do you feel relaxed when you go back home? Do you get a good night's sleep? Do you drink plenty of water? Because that's essential for your brain to function in the long term. So asking these questions to yourself, you will realize that you've come to this particular questions regarding maximizing me. And you have come to this particular stage of life where you can have these conversations with people who are facing mental health issues. It's very important because you've seen what stresses, you've seen what challenges are, struggles are, and you just want to help someone. But that has to be genuinely felt. And I think everyone understands the energy we give each other. So, yeah.
Okay. In terms of the constraints, just to clarify that, what would you say was the biggest? Would you say it is burnout, or would you say it's in terms of people working as a team, maybe?
I would say it's culture. And I will also give you an example around it, because most of the times when it comes to say, I was speaking about this to another friend the other day about mentorship. I was 4 years old and I remember my mom teaching me a Sanskrit quote, which is on mentors and their importance in your life. So it's a little prayer that we offer to God. And we say that Guru is Brahma, Guru is Vishnu, Guru is Maheshwara, Guru is Sakshat Parmeshwara, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah. In this quote, we are literally praising the mentor. We are saying that you are the creator, you are the one who is preserving our journey, and you're also the one who is destroying the weeds of ignorance in this journey. So for us, the role of mentor is, oh my God, it's next. We place them next to God. And when I speak about this to my colleagues, they're like, seriously, okay? And I'm like, yeah, it's a prayer we offer as a child. And this is what we've learned about. So culture plays a very important role. It's something that we bring along with us, especially when you change a geographical location. When it comes to being stressed out and not being able to talk about certain things, but I would say if I'm speaking to a mentor, for me, at my workplace during such times, for me, it's easy to open up myself rather than to someone who doesn't know where I come from. Because I've been made understand that mentors understand you. They want to help you. They want to destroy the weeds of ignorance that come in your journey. And that could be anything. So that's my understanding. So culture, definitely, yes. Burnouts, for sure. Sometimes you just don't know how to manage your workload. So in that case, you don't know what to say to your manager. You don't want to show that you're not worthy of the role that they have hired you for. And you just want to prove that, no, I have achieved so much and I will keep achieving. So you just want to run around the maze and there's no direction there. And hence, you don't communicate. Because you're wanting to find your door, but the door is already there. You just have to knock, talk, and just get it out. So I think burnout, definitely. Culture, yes. Another thing that really holds them back, I feel, is their personal life. And personal life means when you come to work, you come with thoughts. You carry them from your home. Maybe a little fight that you had with your family, your partner, your husband, wife, or probably something where you feel you're not being a good parent because you're working. It could be anything. It could really be anything on the back of your mind. And you don't want to communicate about that because it's very personal to you. You don't want people to know that, oh, she just had a fight. What are people thinking about me now? Am I arrogant? What's well? And then people have these judgments. They have these gossips, little gossips around you. Sometimes I think people don't want to talk about it because of the same. So it could be for any reasons.
That's so true. I'm trying to remember, there's some research, but about if you have a fight the night before, how much it affects your thinking. So like 15, 20, 30% of your cognitive resources are going on what's gone before. And yet people are like, just be professional, leave your emotions at the door. It's not physically something that we can do. Okay, so I see a glimmer of something. If you were to give a TED talk, write a book, what would be the topic? If you could wave a magic wand, right? And this is your moment. It's a TED talk, it's a book. One thing that businesses should do to implement more, and because I've picked up an idea and I just want to see if that's true, what would it be on?
I would say having a buddy, a coach, a mentor in order to emphasize on your overall well-being in the workplace to enhance your performance is what I would talk about.
Brilliant, because that's what I thought. There was a change in your energy when you talked about mentor and you talked about something deep from your childhood. And so that's where I wanted to a little more into that. So I understand the culture in India is very different from the culture here. It's collectivist and guru is a, I know the like here, when you say guru, you're being rude, like you're up yourself and you think that everything, the best, everything. Whereas there's a different path in the Eastern traditions where it's about surrendering to the guru and it's about the sanctity of a guru. I think perhaps in the West, we've had, if you look at almost every president, prime minister, anyone who's put in a guru position, they soon get exposed for abusing their powers. And while that happens in the East, it's traditionally hasn't or has, or I'm not aware of, but there seems to be a different relationship. So could you, that quote, guru, and so was that talking to the gods? Because you said a list of names.
So yeah. It's a prayer we offer, which goes like Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Devo Maheshwara, Gurur Sakshat Parmeshwara, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. So here we bow down to our guru, to the mentor. And the mentee is praying to the mentor that you are my creator. You are the one who's helping me preserve my journey. And you are the one who's also helping me destroy the weeds of ignorance that is coming in my way. And for all these acts of yours, I bow down to you and I want to offer my gratitude. So this is the prayer we say ever since I've been a child. And even today when I wake up in the morning, and now my son also, he's just picked it up from me. He'll sit beside me and we're praying to the gods. And when we ring the bell, we just say this very quickly, Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Deva Maheshwara. It's just set now in the tone, in the genes, everything. So yeah, but that is where the whole thinking comes from, Rob. Can't separate it out of me. And I cannot think of why my mentor is not great. Anyone who's helped me in my journey where I was stuck, just even when they ask me, are you okay, AK? And I'm like, that makes a big difference to how I feel.
Okay. So in the West, there's great pride. You get George Bush Jr. So it's the son of the American president. Says, I'm a self-made man. His dad was the American president, the most powerful man in the world. And he claims to be self-made. Donald Trump got all his money from his dad. I'm a self-made man. So the West is very much aggrandizement on self-made. We're maybe 3, 4 by the time we have conscious thought. So we've had several years, like 70% of our neural network is built up by the age of 7. And I don't know about you, but by 7, I didn't have a lot of critical thought. So we're just taking everything in. We're built by our culture. And yet in the West, we keep going, like, oh, I'm self-made, I did it myself. Nobody ever did, because the richest people, they're not coming from Cambodia or Ethiopia or Vietnam. They're coming from somewhere where you've got a built platform, where you've got access to money, you've got access to resources, you've got access to education. So all of that is what's making you successful, not like I did it on my own will. Because someone doesn't go to a desert island, suddenly become a billionaire and say, I'm a self-made man. They did it from the structures that have been built. And what you've spoken of is entirely different orientation. And I think this is why you appreciate mentorship. Tell us, if you can think about, if you're going to give that TED talk, and what you're saying is, we get stuck. The weeds of ignorance is we don't know what we're in. And if we're going to go, well, I'm self-made, I know it all, then we can't learn and we're just going to keep bashing our heads and failing. And what you're, I think, what you're seeing is sometimes we need outside, an outside perspective. We need fresh eyes. We need someone to tell us what we can't see ourselves. If you were to talk about the key three things, like if there's a structure of the book or the talk is going to have 3 points, what would they be?
First thing would be creating your journey. A mentee can be at different phases of their career. They could either be at the start and they don't know what to do in their life. They could either be right in the middle and they don't know how to manage that journey, how to preserve it. And towards the end, or I'd say not towards the end, but when it comes to facing changes, challenges, anything like deep fears, and you just want to have a communication with someone who understands you, can guide you through that path. So a guiding light throughout that journey. So I would say these three things: creating, preserving, and a guiding light.
Are you familiar with the hero's journey? It comes from something called the monomyth, but Joseph Campbell popularized it. And he basically, he just spent 5 years, he was going to do a PhD on European fairy stories or European stories. And then he said, I found all this stuff in the East and I want to add this. And they said, no, you've got to stick to this. And he said, sod it then. And he went off in the woods and he went 5 years just reading, literally 40 hours a week reading in a cabin by himself. And what he saw after that is he came out, he wrote this book, The Hero with 1,000 Faces. And it's called The Hero's Journey. And so basically he says, every great story has the same structure. And what you have is you have a hero and something happens and he gets called to adventure. So are you familiar with Star Wars?
Yes.
Star Wars, George Lucas had Star Wars for years and he couldn't write it. And he read Joseph Campbell's book and he goes, okay, this is it. So here is the archetypal hero's journey. So Luke goes off, feels like he's built for more, but he's there with the farm and he gets the call from Princess Leia. And he's like, I want to do this, but no, I've got my obligation. So he refuses the call. And then the army comes in and raids it or something like that. And then that's it. I'm going on the adventure. And then he faces his fears. He faces the enemies. So you've got the enemies of the Empire and the Stormtroopers. And then it's friends and allies. So he has these alliances. But a key part is the guide. And the guide is the one that helps them make the jump. So the hero leaves the ordinary world. They go into this other world and they face tests and trials. And they face the fear and the big like boss enemy at the end. And they prove themselves and they learn something. But then the key is that they return. They return to the ordinary world, but they return with a gift. And so they change. Like Buddha is another story. So that the Buddha did the 40 years, where he meditated.
He had the
trials of Krishna and every kind of patient or fear. He resisted it and he came back and his gift was to educate the world.
Yes.
So the hero's journey. And that to me is the best use of a mentor, because like Yoda or Obi-Wan or whatever, they are the one who's been through it. They know what you have to do. They're not in the fight, but they're just going to give you the tools. They see the path. You know, Mr. Miyagi in Karate Kid is another one. And so that's what comes to mind when you're talking about, and I listening to you, and I don't know a lot about HR, but I do know often people talk of them only when there's a problem, and it can seem like that, but you've given me an entirely different perspective.
Yes, lovely.
It's like wherever I've worked, I've never been a problem that I've had to go to them, or I've never, the only time was like redundancies or something like that. What I see from you is you want to be like the person that sets up the, makes each employee a hero on their journey.
That makes a huge difference. If anyone comes to me saying, AK, I don't know how to do this. And I'd be like, do you need help? Let's get you help. And someone who's done that with confidence, I would really enjoy if that person mentors that particular employee, not just for the lessons, but also for confidence, for their journey ahead in life, and to understand that they also, in return, have to mentor someone in the future. So I think it all comes with understanding and just filling in those needs and gaps. And you can do that only if you are, like I said, you can only manage it if you're monitoring it.
I think absolutely. This is where I looked and found out about the employee return on investment, which I understand has a lot of criticism. But I think in the end of the day, if working in a business, then the purpose is profit or purpose or whatever the goal of the business is. And we have to come together and we have to agree on, we work as a collective. This is the collective. This is our goal. This is what we're going to be measured by. And we have to stand off or fall by the measurements. And then it's only by measuring that we're going to know if we're doing a good job or not. Because if we're doing a bad job, whatever, it's never going to work out. It's always going to crash. And so,
and your relationships can only help you understand how you're doing in that job. Like, I've had constructive feedback and I've always chased people for feedback. Hi, just assisted you on this. How do you think I was? Like, you'd see me after this call, I'll be like, hi, Rob, how was I? How can I be better? So I think this helps building relationships to understand where you are. It also helps to build your identity, your beliefs, and set new habits. It just makes you improve yourself. And improvement is progress. So people should not think that I know it all. They should just learn and learn, because there's lots to learn.
Definitely. And for me, learning is like oxygen. It's what I have an orientation that the future is better. And the future is better. The more I learn today, the better the future is. And I don't know, it's deep rooted, because for me, learning is the way I feel more competent. So I feel better about myself when I learn more, and I feel like it opens up more potential. So let me just go back to what did you say? Beliefs.
Identity, beliefs, good habits.
Yeah, my thing is helping teams get to unified action. And I think it starts with trust. Trust, so then you have more communication. When you have communication, then you can agree and you can have commitment, and then you get unified action. But the last step, which is really key, is feedback. And I think too many companies are, it's like an afterthought. They do a one-to-one every year. I work somewhere and we used to do a one-to-one, and our boss was always busy. So we just used to do our own. And we just go to her and she was a great boss. She was the best boss I had. And so we would always be talking informally. Like, I used to give her a lift home because she didn't drive. And we'd always be talking about what was going on and the challenges. And she was the kind of person that she would look at you and see what you were good at and shape your role to your thing. But she was just so busy that she wouldn't do one-to-ones, or because we'd do the other ones. And then my colleague and I, we'd either do it together or each other's, and then just hand her the paperwork and she just sign off on it. But yeah, a lot of organizations, it is just, okay, we're going to wait for a year. And then suddenly it's a shock to someone to hear that they're not being seen as a team player. They're not being productive or whatever. And that's where people get resentful and feel they're being victimized. Where the earlier you can give feedback, the more productive and positive it is.
I totally agree, Rob. And even if there are times when your manager can be busy and they want to postpone your one-to-one, I would say always make sure that it is in your diary. Check with your manager, because yes, they can be busy, but one-to-ones are critical. They are like essential to basically just help you continue or to navigate and still continue. So for me, my one-to-ones have always been about my personal journey in the company, my relationships with my colleagues in terms of benefits. How am I being benefited for my growth, for recognition that I would like to receive? I've done this. How do you think I did it? And I love to have an eye-to-eye contact in my one-to-ones and speak about what is it that I want to do in the future. I think that incredibly shows your commitment towards something that you want to do. Your body language, when you have your eye-to-eye contact made and you want to say that this is what I want to do, it has an impact on your manager. They know that you will do it. You don't feel daunted. You're confident, and you'll take that up even if you've not done that before. And that is a risk-taking ability. So there will be certain projects in the house which otherwise would remain untouched. But just show your excitement, show your nervousness as well. Say you need help, you need guidance, but you'll take a lead. This is all that you do in your one-to-ones. At least I do that. So yeah.
Yeah, it all comes down to, it's so important to have, for people to feel that they trust and they feel safe in order to say that, because it's difficult to say, I need help, particularly, I think probably more from men. I think, I don't know, but typically, or men of my age, maybe, they typically don't ask for help.
Why?
Is that not your experience?
No, I haven't come across. I've mostly worked with women around me. Even in my last job, the team leader was, but he was very young. He was younger to me. So I would say previous job, all women in the house, empowering. But yeah, never came across someone of your age, Rob, who would not express himself. So yeah, no comments there. Sorry.
Okay.
But why wouldn't you say,
sorry?
If I may ask you, why wouldn't you express yourself, if I may ask you?
Not so much me, but typically when you look at men from teenage to 49, the biggest killer, second biggest killer of men is suicide, just because they don't open up, they don't talk, they don't. Typically, I think it's been an issue of patriarchy that to ask for help was a sign of weakness. So I'm talking stereotypically that, yeah, traditionally it's been a difficulty for men to ask for help, to show weakness. But I think things are probably changing now with Gen Z and millennials who are much more open, I think, than my generation.
I would say so, because I've worked with a few who've been younger than me, and yeah, they do express. It's just that they don't express at a length a woman does. Yeah. So you're right there. I'd agree with that. It's just like you're just talking to the point and I'm yapping here.
Yeah, I think, there is a difference in, women have better social skills. Women are better on teams. I don't know if you've read Google's Project Aristotle, like the presence of having a woman on the team, the social skills of a woman, communication is much better from women. So it seems to be some research, which I think
they just have a natural nurturing side as well to them. It shows it's natural.
I think looking back, reading from anthropologists and looking back at, if you look at hunter-gatherer tribes and communities, men typically go off, like when they've been shadowed by anthropologists, men will go off and they'll hunt. They don't talk, because obviously if you're hunting something, any noise, so it's all quiet and it's working on your own, but as a team. Whereas the women are, it's a very social thing. The women and the children, they all come out and they sit down and they start picking off the fruit. And they're having fun, they're chatting. Yeah, and so if you look at evolutionary, if that was the way that we evolved, which it seems to be, probably when you look at men are looking or more driven, tend to be more driven by accomplishment, and women tend to be more driven by connection. So yeah, maybe that's the reason for the difference.
I agree. I also agree with the patriarchal side that you spoke of. If you ask me, do your parents know what you're doing right now? No. They think my ultimate job is to look after my husband, feed him twice a day, look after my son, all his needs, make sure everything, he's receiving everything that he needs from both his parents. And that's it. That's your job, AK. So even if he's been an ambitious father, even if he's given me all the resources, he's basically invested a lot of time, effort, money in me. Towards the end of the day, if you ask him, what is it that you want your daughter to be? I want her to be a good mother and I want her to be a good wife. So that's my father, yeah. Mm. And this comes from, like you said, yes. So it's very true what you said. Yeah.
So how does that feel? Like, here you are, setting people off on the hero's journey, helping them and providing the framework and the support that they need to thrive. Does it feel frustrating that you're not recognized for that?
I feel amazing. Mm. I like the word performance, and I'm quite a performer myself, Rob. And when it comes to work, people call me Speedy Gonzales because they're like, AK, you're speedy and accurate. How? For me, performance is the key to achieving maximized well-being. And performance in all areas, it doesn't mean you have to be the best out of everyone. It just means your performance should make you feel satisfied. The quality of the work you do, whether it's the household chores you do or you arrange a birthday party for your son, I like performing. And my performance is to make everyone happy. It's not to put anyone down. It's basically to seed in the thought that we are a community. We need to perform together. So I always have this togetherness in my thoughts whenever I do anything. And that really shows. So for me, when somebody else performs, I'm like, well done. And that really comes from my heart. I love to see people perform, thrive. We all have our ups and downs. I've seen my very own. And it is all temporary. Everything changes. There's nothing that's permanent in life. We don't stop, or we don't halt, or we don't pause on high peaks. We all travel. So for me, just applaud, just make someone feel good. It's their time. Let them enjoy, celebrate themselves, and they will do it for you as well. It's all about being in a community together. That's it. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that sounds like a great ending for your TED Talk.
Thank you.
It's been lovely to speak to you, and your positivity radiates through. And yeah, I can see how you perform and help other people perform.
Thank you, Rob.
I think it's a gift that you bring.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for listening. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a review so we can spread more flow and unify teams. If you're on LinkedIn, please connect with me, Rob McPhillips.